Hey, welcome back to Living Hope, a weekly journey designed to provide hope, inspiration, and education for those living with pancreatic cancer. Sharing the real-life stories of those really affected by this deadly disease and how they deal with it on a daily basis. And today, well, we're bringing back one of our repeat guests and our host, usually this show. We're going to turn the tables on her a little bit today, Roberta Luna. Welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you for having me back.
I just wanted a chance once in a while to tell your story some more, and not just the amazing 19-year journey you've had surviving a disease that does not have but 10% survival rate for the first 5 years. You've defied the odds. You've been among that small percentage of people that beat this long term, and it's always an ongoing battle. I get that. But one of the things, there's so many issues that I hear in these stories that you tell and share with those you know. And every so often I say, that deserves a special dive. That I'd like to explore. So I'd like to speak up on behalf of the audience and quiz you occasionally here, if we can do that. Not just about your experience, but specific parts of your experience. And today, I don't want to get on my soapbox here and be anti-doctors here, but today I want to focus on something I've experienced in my life, I know you've experienced in your life, and others that have come on this show have experienced it. And that goes to the heart of how doctors respond once they deliver the news. Again, let's just set this up for anybody listening for the first time, give you some stats here. Pancreatic cancer is the third leading cause of cancer-related deaths here in the United States. I don't think people realize that because it's not on the tip of everybody's tongue. Cancer is, but not pancreatic cancer. And yet so many celebrities we've talked about, so many famous people, we just drop the word pancreatic cancer and it just gets classified into all sorts of cancers. But among cancers, of which there are hundreds, I think, this is the third leading cause of cancer-related deaths in the United States. And beyond that, the thing that scares us is pancreatic cancer is the world's toughest cancer to beat, because right now it only has a 5-year survival rate of 10%, half of that when you first got it, right?
Right. When I was diagnosed, it was 4%. And when my dad was diagnosed in 1998, there was only a 3% chance.
So it's gotten a little better, but the overwhelming odds are somebody's going to die once they hear they have this. Perhaps because it's gone too far? Is that why? It's hard to diagnose. We've talked about this a little bit. You know, it gets to a point where there's nothing they can do to help you because it's pancreas is inside between your stomach and your back somewhere, and then I don't even know I got a pancreas or what it does, and the symptoms are mild, I got a back pain, who would think it's cancer, all this kind of stuff. By the time we get there, it's too late, right, for many.
A lot of times it's metastasized, it's spread to other organs, because the first symptoms can be so vague. It can be anything. Like you say, a lot of people complain of a backache. Well, if you're a sports person, then you think, or you exercise a lot, you may feel, well, you know, I pulled a muscle or something like that. So you may ignore it for quite some time, unfortunately. The other symptoms can be stomach issues, you know, diarrhea, constipation, nausea, throwing up, not being able to eat, weight loss. So it's just so many variables there that can be other things that it makes it difficult to diagnose, because that's usually the last thing a doctor will look at is pancreatic cancer.
And part of that is the other number here, that in 2021, according to the stats that I've seen, an estimated 60,000 Americans will be diagnosed and 48,000 people will die. Out of a country of 350 million people, that sounds like a small group of people. So is it not something that even enters the doctor's mind? It's not first on their mind. It's not breast cancer. It's not heart disease. It's not something they immediately, they see all the time and therefore look for all the time.
No, most of the time that will be the last thing a doctor will look at will be the pancreas. They'll look at, you know, they'll tell you maybe it's your gallbladder or your acid reflux. There's other issues it could be. It's generally the last thing they look at unless you really demand or encourage them to look at the pancreas.
All right. So we know why it's so deadly, perhaps. We suspect it has something to do with the fact it's the last thing people think of or the doctor thinks of. It's hard to detect. It's hard to recognize until perhaps it's too late. It's spreading too far. We didn't catch it early enough. And the assumption is if you do catch it early, early detection, you got a much better chance, I would suspect.
That's the general hope and thought.
I don't know if there's proof of that, but that's the assumption. Right?
That's the assumption is if it's caught early and you can get into some treatment, then you have a better, your odds are much better.
Okay. Now, the topic of today is, so you get that diagnosis and the doctor tells you what? I got some bad news for you. Walk us through that moment. Everybody who's come in here says it was a shock. You have one guest that said it happened on New Year's Day, I think it was.
Yes.
Somebody went in and was feeling not good after party, and let's go see the doctor. And wow, we've talked about from the patient's perspective, the shock, the disbelief. Oh my God, what do I do now? Talk about it from the doctor's perspective. What do they say and what do they do?
Basically, what I got is when my dad, uncle was diagnosed, the doctors, they don't look at you. They walk in and they're looking at the floor. It's almost like they're afraid to meet your eyes for whatever reason. Then they sit down and depending on the doctor's demeanor, my dad's doctor basically said, "Sorry, Billy, you've got pancreatic cancer. You're going to die."
Just like that.
And we were just kind of floored coming from my mom and dad were in a small town. And we, I think, expected different way of hearing that kind of
this
news.
I'm going to date myself. This is Dr. Marcus Welby. This is, I don't know, all these doctors that we feel like we have. When I was a kid, they'd come to your house. You knew
right.
The doctor. They were your personal physician. They treated you. They helped you be born. They helped you go through your broken legs. They probably carry you through your whole life here. And yet at that moment, sorry.
Yep. It was nothing like Marcus Welby, nothing like, what we expected for a small town. Basically, like I said, walked in and told my dad, I'm pretty sure it's pancreatic cancer. And if that's the case, then you don't have much of a survival hope here. But let's do the surgery. We'll open you up and maybe we can do a Whipple, which is the operation where it does remove some of the pancreas and some of the other, I call it plumbing, that goes along with it.
Right.
Unfortunately, when we went in, the doctors...
colon cancer, they'll do that too. They'll remove parts of your colon and now you have a colonoscopy, you have a bag or something that you have to discharge and
it's
stuff here.
Kind of rearranging your plumbing, taking some things out and reconnecting things, and told us the surgery would be anywhere from 8 to 12 hours. So if you don't want to stick around, go on home or go someplace and we'll call you when we're done. Well, as a family, we didn't want to leave. We wanted to stay there and just be there as a support. So he knew we were there and it must have been something like, I'd say maybe 20 minutes later, we see the doctor walking down the hall. And I think that really encouraged us because we thought, wow, only 20 minutes. It wasn't the full 8 to 12 hours. So maybe it wasn't as bad as he thought.
Right.
But as we watched him, we realized he wasn't really looking at us. He's looking down at the floor and then comes in and just says, "Well, I just wanted to let you know we opened your dad up and the cancer's everywhere. There's nothing we can do. We're going to close him back up and... I'd take him home, get his house in order, and just enjoy as much time as you can with him." And we were kind of shocked. We were like, well, cancer, there's chemo, there's different treatments. Can't we do something?
Can't we keep fighting? Because put me in a research group. Or what do I do for that period of time? Is he going to be in pain? Or how do I do this? I got a million questions at that point in time here.
And basically the questions we asked, we did ask him, what are the best things we can do for him? And he would just tell us, "Well, just go home and enjoy him. There's really nothing you can do. He's going to die." And, I would just spend as much time with him, make sure he's got everything in order that he wants, how he wants to do things, because there's just no cure and there's nothing more we can do. It's everywhere. And there's nothing that we can do but sew him up and send him home.
I would love to have a doctor on this program if they'd be willing. I'm not going to beat him up, but I would like to debate this issue because my own experience, not with pancreatic cancer, but with my late aunt's Waldenstrom's unique blood cancer, my dad's leukemia blood cancer, my mom's breast cancer, all of whom, eventually died, I felt much the same. Here was my impression, right or wrong, this is the way I walked out of all of those situations. It was an embarrassment to the doctor. He or she didn't know what to say at that point in time. They weren't trained how to handle this. They're trained to cure people. When they can't cure people, they don't know what to do. They don't know how to approach it. They don't know how to handle it. And they just as soon move on to somebody else they can help.
I think a lot of times that's it. They're, I don't know if they're embarrassed or just, they want to do so much for their patients, or at least I hope they would, that when they can't, I don't know if they just don't know what to do from there.
Yeah. Is it a feeling of guilt, a feeling of failure? Is it a feeling, just an uncomfortable, somehow it's an uncomfortable feeling. And it's a conversation they must have all the time because people die all the time. And yet they don't seem to know how to, they might have the greatest bedside manner in the world. But when it comes to that, the universal stories I hear, by and large, is one of failure. My doctor, at that moment, they were through with me.
Yeah. And I don't know if maybe that's, at least in my time, I was kind of raised where, you know, you put your doctor on the pedestal.
Oh, sure.
If he told you you had to go home, take, you know, 3 aspirins, call him in the morning, you did it and you never questioned him.
Right.
So I don't know if that's part of society, just putting the doctor on the pedestal. And then when that pedestal falls, they don't know how to deal with it and don't know how to handle it themselves. I don't know if they get any training in medical school on how to deal with that.
I would love to hear that, because they spend a great deal of time, you know, learning technical skills. They learn business skills. They have consultants to help them, you know, maximize their practice. And, you know, this feels to me too much like an assembly line these days. 5 minutes and out. That's all Medicare will pay. That's and on to the next patient and on and on. And I understand trying to be efficient and all these other things. But it also, it even further exacerbates the problem, because they can't sit and cry with you. They can't pray with you. They can't hold their hand. They can't say, come back, I know this is a shock, let's talk some more about it once it sinks in. I don't get paid for that. I don't have time for that. And I don't know how to do that.
I think that's a lot of it, is they don't know how. And I think there's a lot of pressure put on them as well, because like you say, you have so much time to see a patient. Whereas before, you know, we'd make an appointment with a doctor, and if our appointments took 30 minutes, 45 minutes, that's the way it was. Now they're maybe 15 minutes at the most, and they're trying to get you in, things done, and get you back out again. A lot of the times they don't have that time to sit and talk to you with, you know, what's going on. If you ask them, what do I do? They might be able to offer you a brochure or an organization to go to, but generally they don't even do that. So.
And that's the other shock. So time is part of it. Money is part of it. I'm sorry to say, you know, I'm not getting, there's nothing I can do. I'm not getting compensated for this. I'm not going to get any money back for doing this. It's now I'm on my own time. Maybe that's some of it. And some of it's just a lack of training. I really don't know what to do. I'm a scientist. I'm a technician. I'm a healer. I'm a helper. When I can't heal, when I can't help, I don't know what to do except say sorry and then move on to somebody else I can and heal. But I think part of it comes down to what you were just saying there, which is it isn't just the money and the time and the talent and the training. There is a reluctance to tell you anything. I would say to my doctor, well, what should I do with my mom, my dad, my aunt? And they'd shrug and they'd say, you know, make them come, something generic, mumbly. Say, well, they can't live alone. They'd say, well, okay, I can't take them into my house. I got to quit my job. They don't want to move into my house. They don't have the money to pay for assisted living and other things. And, you know, what's hospice look like? Nothing. Just go figure it out in yourself. Rather than say, hey, you've gotten a shock. Let's set up a follow here, and here is our 5 steps to follow next. Here's your 2 steps to fight. Here's your 2 steps to accept, and here's your 5th option if you want to try it, some other crazy thing. They don't give you resources. They don't give you guidance or anything. Why? Are they afraid to be sued? Are they afraid that you're going to – they don't want to steer you. They don't say, well, here, call the Pancreatic Cancer Action Network, for example. Or anybody.
No, they don't. And we've even had, which we will still even can't understand, we've even had doctors speak at our Purple Stride, which is our walk to cure pancreatic cancer. And he's spoken at our events, taken questions, but then when he treats a patient with pancreatic cancer, he never once mentions our organization or even gives them a brochure. And even if it's not with us, somebody that's, you know, a renowned organization that can help.
Or give out 3 brochures if you don't want to make a specific recommendation. Here's 3 guides. Here's 3 things. If you're trying to be generic, I don't want to seem to be endorsing anybody. I always suspect, again, it comes back to money. I'm afraid they're going to get sued. You went this route. You told me to do this. It didn't work out. And therefore, I'm going to come blame you. So if you want to be neutral, do that. But don't do nothing. And they all seem to do nothing.
Yeah, I don't want to say, you know, they all. Because
not they all, but all the ones I went, let's put it this way, all the ones that I went through did nothing. My father passed away, And I still got calls from his cancer specialist and others 2 months later. Oh, it's time for Mr. Roberts' appointment. He died. That's how involved you were in this latter stage. You wash in. My aunt was the worst story of all. She had this rare form of blood cancer, Waldenstrom's. And the only thing kept her alive, again, most people died. She didn't. And for 20 years, they kept giving her this Procrit shot that artificially forced her body to make red blood cells, which it didn't want to make. And it was horrible and had side effects and everything here, but it kept her alive. Otherwise, she's lethargic and weak and not producing red blood cells, and eventually that kills her. And it did. But 20 years went by, they kept her alive with this, and other ideas and crazy things they tried, and clinical trials and things she did, and she just was try and do anything. And it worked in her case. 20 years she lived with this deadly disease. In fact, she outlived the doctor who diagnosed her. He said, you only got a year or two to live, and he didn't know he was talking about himself and not her. Anyway, finally, after all this time, she just worshipped this doctor. He was renowned and out in the desert and did everything. And one day she called up to make her next appointment, and the nurse says, oh, doctor says you don't have to come back anymore. Well, what do you mean? Am I cured? No, there's nothing we can do for you anymore.
Wow.
The doctor doesn't tell me this? The nurse just handed, oh, by the way, tell her it's over. And next, that was the coldest thing I had ever seen done. She cried. She thought, then I guess I'm dead now. You know, he's given up hope on me. And he can't even tell me this in person. We've got a 15-year relationship. He can't even share this with me. I just get so angry every time I think of it. But that, I've heard other stories like that. So I guess, I don't know if it's time. I don't have the time to handle this. Money. I don't get compensated anymore to handle this. You know, that's like when you go into hospice. That was the other thing we discovered. In my mother's case, we put her into hospice, and she wanted to see her doctor. He says, I can't come see you anymore.
Right.
Once you enter hospice, they will not pay for me, and therefore I won't show up. Mm. I said, well, can't you just come by and say hi or say goodbye or something? No, there's no, there was 20 years they had these relationships, multi-year relationships, and in the end, there's no goodbye. Mm. It's just, you know, good luck.
See you in the next world or whatever.
Yeah. And I'm always shocked at that. So then I guess I'm pretending myself that you cared, that we had a relationship here. You worked so hard to keep my mom alive or me alive or my aunt alive. At some moment you decided, I can't do it anymore. I'm not going to get paid for it anymore. It ain't going to work anymore. Is there no, it's almost like we should have a goodbye ceremony. Take me out for a drink. Sit me down in your office and have this special final talk here. Walk through something. Give me some choices. Hand me off to somebody. But don't just say goodbye.
Not in that way. I mean, my dad's doctor was pretty cold. And like I said, he just, when my dad would ask him, well, you know, what can I do? Because my dad was a fighter. He wanted to live, even if it meant just doing something experimental. He still wanted to live. And he asked the doctor, what can I do? And the doctor said, well, you know, Billy, you could have stopped smoking 20 years ago.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks.
And when somebody gets a diagnosis that they're dying, they don't need to carry the blame and the guilt.
No.
So I think if that was the way the doctor felt, he could have kept that to himself and not, you know, spoke that way to my dad. And
although there's no proof that the smoking might have given him lung cancer, but it didn't give him pancreatic cancer. There's no proof of that, I don't think.
Well, it's just like most any cancer, you know, smoking is a contributor as well for almost any cancer. But to tell a patient that is learning that they're dying that it's because it's their fault and making them feel like it's their fault, that puts a big burden on them that they don't need to be going through, especially at that time.
So we're back to, I just wanted to bring this to light because I've heard this too many times. You experienced it. I experienced it. And those listening who are going through this journey now may be experiencing the same thing. I don't think any of us are prepared for that's the, that's one of those hidden shocks that comes out of the blue. I trust my doctor. I believed my doctor. I listened to my doctor. Maybe my doctor kept me alive for a long period of time. But at some point when that relationship ends, it's quick, it's cold, it's curt. There isn't a lot of crying. There isn't a lot of, well, I'll check in with you and see how you're doing. I'll come by one more time. I hate to have it end like this. It's just kind of like you don't need to come back anymore.
I haven't really...
Maybe it's not quite that cold, but I was that cold in my aunt's case and some other cases. Yeah. But it seems like it's a very quick, sudden goodbye. And at that moment, they tell you, leave, prepare. Without any... There's no transition. There's no talk. There's no brochures. There's no advice. There's no nothing. Just this cold, hard reality. You're probably going to die. There's nothing I can do. Sorry.
Yeah. And like I said, my dad's doctor was horrible. But in retrospect, as far as like when I was diagnosed, my doctor pretty much did the same thing in the fact that he wouldn't look at me in the eyes. He was watching the floor as he walked in.
Yeah, isn't that, that's just wrong right there.
But anyway, what I do have to say is that at least he did hold my hand. He did take my hand and say, I'm sorry, it is pancreatic cancer. But he didn't give me much hope either. But what he did say is, you know, you already know because you've experienced it with your family that nobody survives this cancer. But let's at least get you a few good months so we'll start chemo right away.
Yeah, right.
And what I can say at least he did do is because he was not familiar with the disease himself, he did reach out to other doctors that he'd gone to school with, and both had gone, one was with John Hopkins, another with MD Anderson, to ask him, you know, I've got this patient, she's got other issues as well, she's got pancreatic cancer, one kidney, what do I do with her?
Yeah.
You know, so at least I can say at least he did try to do something. And I have come across another doctor that is really great. I mean, he's not my doctor, but I know him through another patient. And he does check in with me whenever he sees me at our Purple Strides that we do, just to make sure that I feel I'm getting the right care and yeah, just to be there. But
they're supposed to be the experts. They tell you this deadly diagnosis. They then, I think, have an obligation, one, to transition you somewhere, to give you some, I think it's like once the shock, I always feel like there should be one more meeting where you come back and now you've had some questions and I'll tell you what I know. Ask me what you want to know. I'll give you some guidance, some brochures, some ideas, some suggestions, what I've learned. In the meantime, I went and researched it. You went and researched it. It seems like we should come back and regroup one more time before we end this relationship. If nothing else, it's kind of a goodbye. It's a transition to something. And giving you some assistance, here's some possible resources. Other than that, we're all forced to be on our own. At a moment, you must feel really lost. I know my aunt did. She lost all hope at that point in time. And she died shortly thereafter.
You do, because I think, and maybe it's, I don't know if it's because we put so much value and put the doctors on the pedestal, but you expect them to have all the answers. So when they come and tell you you're dying from a certain disease, it's a shock. And you want more answers. You want them to tell you what to do. And basically, you know, they're
not going
to. Or
how to handle it, or how much time. Yeah, and
where to go, where to get the information. And the worst thing I can say is don't ever Google anything.
You get 1,000. Yeah. But what else you got to do? You go home and Google it, and now you got 100 different opinions. Yeah.
And most of them, like I said, aren't going to have any more hope than anything else. So.
You try the crazy stuff. In my mother's final days, my dad, who was so scientific and so so fact-based, he'd try any crazy thing that he could come up with. Just, you know, you get desperate. You'll try anything. You'll try any experimental thing.
They do. They tell you you drink certain water, or you drink it a certain way, or you drink it out of a certain container.
Yeah.
That's supposed to help. You eat certain foods, and that's supposed to do something. You get sometimes more advice from the outside world than you actually get from the medical field, which maybe is because they are worried about malpractice. I don't know. I don't know what goes on in their mind, and I've often wondered, you know, the outcomes of this cancer generally that is not going to be good. Why did you pick this specific disease?
Those that focus on it. Yeah, even those, right.
Because you know generally most people aren't going to survive, so why did you pick?
Why are you so poorly prepared for this moment? Yeah.
And I think generally the feeling that I've gotten from them, or even what some of them have voiced to me, is they feel like, well, if I can at least do something to make you feel somewhat better, more secure, even if it's just for a few minutes, then that's what I want to do, and that's why I chose the field. But a lot of them have such really bad bedside manners, and maybe that's not always important if you can, you know, do the cure or get the person, you know, to survive longer.
I get it. They're scientists, they're researchers. You're just another case number. They can't get too close because everybody does, and so they have to keep some distance. I understand some of that. I don't accept it all, but I understand some of it. But I don't understand this sudden, quick, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. Here it is. There's the answer. I don't even disagree with that, as hard as that is, as cold as it is. But then what? come back, give me one more shot where I can absorb this, you can research it, and we can review it one more time at least. Or maybe I want a second opinion, or maybe I just come back with a whole bunch of questions. But that moment never arrives. They pretty much tell you to go home, pack your affairs, and shrug and say, I'm sorry. And next, bring me somebody I can help. Bring me somebody I can cure. Bring me somebody, you know, who isn't dying here. And I just think that's wrong. I just do. If that's true, then where did you go? We'll leave the last couple of minutes on some hope there is. If the doctor, I guess that's the point of the story. Don't expect the doctor to support you, guide you, direct you through this journey. If that's your diagnosis, that may be the end of your relationship with your doctor, but your journey still goes on. Yours has gone on for 19 years.
Yeah, and what I suggest for anybody to do is whatever, for whatever reason, if you're not sure what the doctor's telling you, you don't feel you're getting the support, get a second opinion, get a third opinion, get a fourth opinion, however many opinions.
And we're so reluctant to do that. Well, the doctor said this. Well, maybe they're wrong.
And maybe they're right, but just to reassure your own self that you're doing everything you can for you, because the doctors can only do so much for you. You have to take it upon yourself and be your own advocate and be your own, you know, researcher. Go out there. Like I said, don't just research anything. My thing I tell people is you need to go to pancan.org.
We'll give that again. That's the Pancreatic Cancer Action Network, which was created by this woman that you work with because she had the same experience. They said, we don't know what to tell you. And she said, well, that's not good enough.
Right.
And she started doing her own research at Johns Hopkins and online and other things, and started to bring together other stories and other resources, and we created this giant support network, which is what most of these advocacy groups are. They're the place you go to next when nobody else can give you any ideas or hope.
Yeah, and for she lost her mother to pancreatic cancer before, and there was nothing out there, so that's, like you said, why she developed PanCan, and it's been a great organization. I always call them my one-stop shop because I can get everything there. I can get advocacy. I can get research. I can get patient services, which is a really excellent thing they provide for all patients and their families. They don't charge you for it, but they'll send you out all this great information.
There you go.
They help you as far as researching. They'll give you a list of doctors, facilities that are experienced in pancreatic cancer. Because the one advice I can give is you need to have a doctor that is experienced in pancreatic cancer.
Yeah, clearly. They don't know. That's part of it, too. So I say part of it is time. I don't have the time to figure this out. Part of it is money. I'm not sure I'm going to get compensated anymore, you know, from all these insurance carriers and Medicare and other sorts of things. And part of it is just knowledge. I don't know what to do. I don't see this very often. I see it's deadly. I don't know any more than you know.
And maybe in that, and you know, on their side, maybe that's it for them too, is they just happen to see so much death. They don't see a lot of survivors. But the one thing I can tell any doctor out there,
that's true too. Maybe they give up hope. Yeah.
And don't take that hope away from your patient. I mean, I'm fine. Tell me the statistics. Tell me the facts. Tell me everything I need to know. Give me the dirt on it. That's fine. I need to know that to fight it. But don't take away my hope, because that's all I have.
And we'll emphasize that again. You said in other shows, I'm sure we'll talk about in the future, it's your journey. It's up to you, those of you listening who are on this journey, it's up to you to decide when it's over. I mean, yes, there's a finality to it that you have to maybe deal with or face at some, or maybe not. You know, Roberta was told the same thing, and 19 years later, she's among the few that's survived and gone on here. And it keeps getting better over time. So I don't want to give you false hope, but the point is that you said in the story before, the doctor shouldn't tell you when it's over, when to quit fighting, when to give up, when to go home. That's your decision, right?
That's my decision. I mean, it's okay to tell me to go home and put my house in order as far as making sure all of my documents and all that need to be taken care of. That really, we all should be doing that
anyway.
Practical
advice, yeah.
Yeah, right. That's something I know we all put off, but just don't take away my hope. Tell me everything I need to know, how bad it is, that's fine. Don't take away my hope, and don't tell me when I need to stop fighting, because I will decide when I stop and not you.
Yeah, and clearly there are a point in all these cancers, it becomes too painful, becomes too difficult. People do say, I just prefer to let it go now. Let's stop the treatment and let's deal with this. Families don't always want to accept that. Friends don't always want to accept it, but that's their choice. And in reverse, there are those that fight to the very last breath and keep fighting, you know, on and on and on. Even when others give up hope, the family, the friends, the doctor, whatever. So it can go either way, but it's your journey. And I guess they leave you stranded on this journey. At the moment you start on this journey, it feels like too many doctors walk away.
They do. And again, like I said, I don't know if it's because it's just something they don't know what to do once it gets to a certain point. It's so sad to see even some of the doctors I see, I think they need to separate themselves as well to a certain point so that when you know, if you do die, then they don't take it as hard. But again, why did you get into that field?
Yeah.
You know what the outcome is.
My dad's favorite question that always made them uncomfortable is, okay, so what would you do if this was your wife or your mother? When you talk about his wife, my mother, personalize it. Quit seeing me as just another statistic on a sheet. Mm-hmm. What would you do? And that's when they get uncomfortable and, you know, because I don't think they would just walk away and give up. They'd look for every research. They'd look for every stone unturned. They'd try every possible recourse. And if not, they'd know how to make it as comfortable and make it as good as we can get it. And, you know, on and on and on. It's not like they haven't been through this before. It's not like they don't have knowledge. But at some point, they just decide you have to walk the rest of this journey alone.
And I have actually asked him that. I said, what would you do if it were, you know, your dad or your mom or whatever the situation happened to be? And gotten a various of answers. Some have said I would just go home and enjoy as much time with them as you can. And I've had others who tell me I would fight with everything you have.
Yeah.
So you do get a variety of answers. And I think it depends maybe on the type of doctor and the type of cancer.
Well, the takeaway today is don't expect the doctor to be of much help past that point. They may or may not continue to help you. But more cases than not, they'll probably kind of shrug and say, I'm sorry. And that's kind of the end of your journey with them. And now you become this mysterious journey on your own that we keep documenting week in and week out. How do you feel? How do those around you deal with it? And where do you turn for extra ideas, advice, support, knowledge? What am I facing? What's this going to look like? What are the odds? What can I do? What can't I do? You know, all that is what this show is about. We're going to try and collect and document that for you, for those on that journey, or for those having, you know, or thinking, anybody on that journey or anywhere near that journey. This is a resource to help answer what the doctors can't or won't or don't, whatever.
Yeah, I think it's hard for them, and just give a shout out because I have to see my doctor later today, so I don't want to.
We can call out good ones. Yeah, you can see, you can say good ones if you know them.
Yeah, like I said, there are a lot of doctors that will be there with you and hold your hand and get
I
you through
I hope that there's
it,
a but, new generation coming. Yeah. I think that the medicine has changed. It's not just an assembly line. I think there is more and more people who look to. I think doctors always cared, but I just don't know that they either knew how to handle it or felt comfortable handling it or whatever, you know, didn't have the time, money, knowledge, whatever it was. There's some barrier there. And too often, I guess we just have to bring out this fact that be prepared. Your doctor may not ride along with you. Maybe let's look at it that way. You may be at that point on your own fighting this journey alone. And that's why you need to find friends and a support group wherever you're hearing this. To help guide you and give you thoughts and ideas and encouragement and support and everything else that you're going to need.
And even if your doctor is with you, I still would recommend going, like I said, and getting another opinion or even going to pancan.org again for information, only because sometimes they come up with stuff like clinical trials that your doctor may not be aware of yet.
Well, we're going to talk about that in future episodes because I don't think most doctors really know much about clinical trials. All they do is kind of Google it like we do. We've talked about it in another show. There are lots of clinical trials going on all over the country, mostly in major cities, not in minor rural areas, mostly in big metropolitan areas. But you'd be amazed what you can find. And not that they're all going to work either, but at least it's something, some hope, yeah. Some idea. Otherwise, you got nothing. Otherwise, you might as well, you know, I don't want to say end it, but, you know, I suspect some people do. Just, well, that's it. I give up. I quit. I'm over. I'm done.
Well, I think they feel if the doctor's given up, why should they continue to fight?
Yeah,
but
right.
Just a good piece of advice is, you know, rely on your doctor, yes, but don't put all the responsibility on them. Be your own best advocate. Be your own best patient and find the information yourself.
That's what I learned. We'll do a show on that as well, how to be your own advocate, because I wasn't prepared to be my parents' advocate, my aunt's advocate. I was just there to assist, to support. I found I had to fight. I had to push. I had to transfer records. I had to make sure things got done. I had to become there. If they couldn't do it themselves, I had to do it for them. And together, we had to fight the system. because the system, too often you get lost, you get things screw up, you get forgotten, mistakes are made, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, and I guess nobody's really taught that. We're never told that. We're somehow expect, I'm in the system, I'm on the airplane, I don't have to trust they know how to fly it. I don't have to trust they're going to the right city here. You know, I just sit and accept. If you take that mentality, my opinion, with the medical, you will be lost and confused and angry and lots of things.
No, even that you have to take on yourself and make sure you've got all the medical records you need to have them on hand when a doctor may want them, so you don't have to go back and request them and waste that time. When you're dealing with pancreatic cancer, all the time is important. You can't afford to waste weeks.
Yes. Well, we're not going to waste any more time today. I just wanted to bring that out on the table, put it out there. This problem exists. I hope it you don't go through it, but if you do, don't be shocked. This is what many are experiencing, and there is hope, so then you have to become your own advocate, and there are places like PanCan you can go find information, right?
Yes, definitely.
Okay, well, I'm glad I got that off my chest.
Me too, thank you.
I wanted to say that for a while. Well, there you have it. One more reason to tune in to Living Hope. Really is a weekly program now designed to provide hope, inspiration, and education for those living with pancreatic cancer. We all need answers. We all got questions. We all wonder what to do next, and too often, even the doctors don't know. So today is an example of how we share real-life stories of those really affected by this disease, what they're really going through, and what to deal with, so you'll know. And you'll know what to do should you be in that situation. If you'd like to share your stories, please come join us. And if you know anyone who needs help on their journey, well, we suggest calling patient services at 877, the number 2, PANCAN. That's 877, the number 2, PANCAN, which of course stands for the organization motivating this show, Pancreatic Cancer Action Network. Group of people just like you who got tired not knowing and decided to form a group to help, guide, share, support anyone on this journey. Thanks for listening. Share the story, and we'll see you next week.